Hello. Thank you for tuning in. You are listening to ByteRadio.me's Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. For network or show information, visit www.ByteRadio.me or call 843-808-0777. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show with your host, Robert Sharp. Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining us for today's edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Today, my very special guest is Marjorie Goodson, a classically trained ballet dancer and daughter of the late Mark Goodson, brings us a collection of dramatic and dynamic dance images in her book titled MG. Her use of gritty, raw, and often nude imagery reveals the dancer's sensual, provocative nature and her love of the contemporary through the architectural shapes that she creates and molds with her sculpted body. With stunning textures, lighting, and composition, MG highlights the sheer physicality and drama of contemporary dance. Alternating between the flamboyant and vulnerable, Marjorie celebrates the body physical and the body emotional. At 54, Marjorie proves that you can be beautiful and passionate at any age. Marjorie's book is available at Amazon.com, and I have a direct link to her book there in the show page description. And you can also find out more information by visiting her website, which is MarjorieGoodson.com. And there is also a link to that website in the show page description. So that, I'd like to welcome Marjorie to the show. Good day, Marjorie.
Hi, Robert. Thank you so much. It's so interesting to hear that read back, you know, because I was like, oh, well, that's pretty accurate. That sounds about right.
Well, good. I'm glad. And, you know, and just looking at the images I've seen, I think gritty and raw, you know, that kind of captures it.
Thank you. Well, that's what we were going for sure.
Well, mission accomplished. Well, let's talk a little bit. You know, I would love for you to share, you know, as a, you know, having, you know, being a contemporary a ballet dancer, you know, growing up in dance, would you mind sharing with the listeners just a little bit about your journey when it comes to dance?
Sure. I mean, dance has always been something I loved. I started at a very young age. I mean, I think I was probably 4, but it was just something I feel like it chose me as opposed to me choosing dance. And I began studying very professionally, I would say, at age eight, at the School of American Ballet, which is the feeder school for the New York City Ballet. And I studied there for about 5 years, and just that carried me into my teens. And then I fell in love with jazz, and I became introduced to that when I was a senior in high school. And that sort of was a game changer for me, and that was a whole different style. And I sort of fell in love with this style called Fosse, after Mr. Robert Fosse, who was a very iconic, for those people who know dance and know ballet and know jazz, very iconic dancer, very iconic choreographer who, you know, did many plays and Broadway and all of that. And so that's really continued to be my love. And so I have these wonderful forms of dance in my life, and it sort of carried me up until this point and through my book and just through all stages of my life. So without spending more than the whole show talking about it, but that's the Cliff Notes version.
Well, you know, and the thing about what I've noticed for some people, when you say, you know, dance chose you, it just seems some people come into this life with just a definite course, a definite journey, or a definite you know, desire or passion, you know, and you know,
absolutely,
it often comes out at a young age, like it did with you.
Absolutely. For me, there was nothing else. Like, my daughter is very interesting. She's a beautiful equestrian, but she also loves golf. She's a singer. She's a songwriter. She's got so many different interests, but for me, there was only one thing, and it was dance, and it's always been that way. And I just feel like it's like my oxygen. I have to do it. I have no choice but to do it. And I call it my love torture because I love it, but it also brings me a great deal of pain. I mean, I just came from class before this interview, and I'm sitting here sort of rubbing my leg, and I'm like, okay, you know, this is just part of it. It's just part of the course. And, you know, as you get older, it, you know, your body, as much as you keep it in shape, but, you know, you're not in your teens anymore, so you have to be a little kinder.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Well, I have to tell you, I posted this morning, you know, the link to our Today Show along with the cover of your book, MG. And
oh my gosh,
I had to laugh because probably about a half hour ago, I had a comment from a follower in Australia, Adelaide, Australia, he wrote, geez, I wouldn't want MG as a personal trainer. That looks extreme.
Oh.
And I just laughed.
That's
like,
funny.
I responded back, I couldn't hold that pose for 2 seconds.
Oh my gosh, that's so funny. Yes. Oh well, I do push myself. So I don't give up. I don't like to give in or give up, I say.
Yeah. So now, what you said that this is like your oxygen. So I mean, do you feel that this is going to be something that you're going to continue on to do until you get to a point where you just can't do it anymore?
Absolutely, and I don't even like to even use those words because I think that dance can always be in your life in some fashion because it deals with movement. So whether I don't think I would ever be a teacher because I just don't have those skill sets. I sort of prefer to be the student and let someone else do the choreographing. But I love to be in the world of dance. I will always be in the world of dance. And currently, obviously, after this first book, I'm doing another book called MG2. So, and that's a sort of a very different direction, which is brighter and bolder and works with paint because I also am an artist. I paint. So I thought I wanted to use my body as the canvas and use the paint on my body. So,
Wow. So
it's a very different direction, a little bit bolder, probably less clothes than the first one, but we're covered in paint. So it's a, you know, it's a different type of costume. But it's, much more physical and more physically demanding. But dance is always something that will continue to be in my life in some fashion.
Yeah. So now I have to admit, the first ballet I ever went to was 3 days ago. I'm about 60. I went to see the Nutcracker.
Better late than never, Robert. Good for you. Good for you. And you saw a good one. The Nutcracker is awesome.
Yeah, I thought it was time to expand my horizons, and it was interesting just how that all came about. But
did you like it?
One of the things I did like it a lot.
Good.
It was, I mean, you know, besides the story, and obviously, you know, it's you know, the Nutcracker is just such a traditional treat.
Such a traditional.
But, you know, but the physical demands of the dances, I mean, the routines, and seeing the dancers, you know, go through so many different sets, you know, I mean, I'm just stunned, you know, I mean, it's just, you know, it's just amazing. It takes such physical discipline to be able to do that.
Absolutely, and it's so funny as you, who is the novice and the beginner, for me, who's been it my whole life, I still feel the exact same way. I mean, I'm always on the edge of my seat just thinking, how is this possible? How can we do this? And, I mean, it really is very physically demanding, and yet to look so graceful and like a fantasy. And I think that was one of the things that drew me to dance was that fantastical motion, that like, how can they look like it's completely effortless? And then you realize, well, it's not. And all the work that does, and all the work that goes into it. I mean, it's just artistry in motion.
It is. It is very much so. Now,
well, I'm glad you went.
I did. Well, you know, and one of the things that surprised me, not so much on stage, but you know, there were young folks. I mean, you know, in the Nutcracker, they had, you know, the little angels. I mean, the ones that were up there were probably like 6 or 7 years old, or you know, maybe 8.
Yes.
But what surprised me so much was the audience. I mean, there were so many families there with their young children, and I was, you know, in between watching what was on stage, I was also kind of looking at, because there were a lot of children around me, just looking at them and watching them, and there was just such, they were so entranced by it, and I just thought that was wonderful that the parents, you know, exposed their children to it at such an early age.
Of course. I mean, it's magical, and I think every girl in some fashion, or not every girl, obviously, but, you know, little girls love ballet and ballerinas and dressing up and being pretty and putting on a tutu. And sometimes that's where that passion starts. It can just start with seeing someone else do it. I know for myself, that's sort of how it happened. And then, of course, you know, you stay and start the work.
Yeah. So now, For those listening who have younger children, what would you say to the parents to maybe you know, encourage or support that activity in their children?
Oh, well, I think any kind of passion. I mean, if your child has, you know, a desire to dance, I think it's very important that you nurture that and explore that and see if that's something that they want to do. And that really applies to anything. It could be, you know, painting or something. I think that the notion of getting a child involved and nurturing a passion and letting them find something they're good at really can carry them through so many things. I think it allows for accountability. I think it allows for confidence. I think it allows for purpose. And just a simple love of doing something that you love to do. And it sort of feeds your soul, and it gives you a place in your life, you know, when you're little, because you're kind of, you know, you're not a homeowner and you don't have a job. So what, as a child, can you do? And these, you know, these passions, whether it's dance or art or gymnastics or skating, so, so important. And I you know, every parent should. And I think that they do is you know, encourage their children to find something. You know, I did with my daughter. I tried to take her to ballet. She was not interested at all, which was kind of sad for me. But now that I look back on it, I'm very happy, because I think we probably would have butted heads in some fashion. And then we tried tennis, and then we finally settled on horseback riding. And she's a beautiful equestrian, and that really has carried her through her whole life. And we call that her safe place. So no matter wherever life carries you, you always can go home again. And I would say you can always go back to your passion. It's like a home base, and it's very important that parents find that for their children.
Yeah, I agree. Now, the book MG, how did it come about? What was the inspiration that fed into creating that book?
Oh, Robert, that's a loaded question. How much time do we have? How many hours do we have for that question? Let's see if I can, again, Cliff Notes version. Well, the inspiration started when my daughter went off to college, and I had actually created these coffee table books for her riding. And I remember thinking when she was going off to college, I thought, okay, maybe one day I'll do this for dance. And I sort of shelved that idea. And then when she went off to college to sort of deal with my empty nest syndrome, I threw myself back into the world of ballet. And I got very involved in that and did that for about 2.5 years, 3 years. And I remember thinking, I was involved in this contemporary ballet company. And while I was in the middle of that, I thought, you know, I'd really like to do something for me, for myself. You know, it was wonderful working in this contemporary ballet company and sort of supporting someone else's dreams and desires, but it really got me thinking about my own. So I approached my makeup artist, Torsten Witt, who has been with the book from the beginning, and he mentioned Andrea Radatoiu, who is the beautiful and so talented Romanian photographer, who was once a fashion model herself turned photographer. And we all sat down, and I sort of told him what I was looking for, which was to create these, you know, photographs, sort of gritty, earthy, edgy of what I am now. And off we went, you know, and I saw her work, and it was just perfect for what I wanted. And as I said, through her lens, I got to be the artist that I'd always wanted to be. And so off we went. Back in 2014, MG was created, and then, of course, it took a while to get it going because we weren't sure where we were going, what the animal was. We didn't really know how we were going to do it, and we just sort of photo by photo, photo shoot by photo shoot, and I think we had to get someone to publish it and this, that, and the other, and then I brought in my fabulous stylist, Bobby Sheets, who has been on since the middle of the book, and she's amazing, and as my vision grew, so did the team, and then in 2017 we had MG. So it took a while. It takes a while.
Yeah,
to nurture your vision, it takes a while.
Right, and I'm sure it just grew organically, and I'm sure it changed. As your team was being built, they would add their own perspective and contribution to it.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Torsten originally had sort of come on just as the makeup artist and the hairstylist, and has since grown into sort of the creative consultant and art direction, and has really taken a strong line there and helping me create the vision that I want to create, not only through my body and my costume and the look itself, but through the energy and how we want to portray the shot itself. And so, and we all get along really well. I mean, we're just nobody has a big ego. Nobody really cares. It's all about getting the look and creating the imagery and doing it to the best of everyone's ability, which is really nice. It's really a team play, which is great.
Yeah. So now when it came time for selecting the location and the costuming, how did that, was there a particular process that you used, or did you say we wanted to do this kind of image and then look for location and then cost? How did that kind of all come together?
Well, I think we started with a general concept of what sort of things were we going for. What are some of the words? And you mentioned the word gritty, edgy, textural, and these were the words I used. And sort of once you establish those words, then you say, okay, well, where is gritty? Where is textural? Where is, we started out in my home, and then we moved to downtown LA, sort of with cement and under a bridge, and created this sort of the juxtaposition of, the rawness of the cement and the grit of the city. And then we'd move into the beach, which is the sand and the rock and the wind, and that was more textural, and it had an earth element and sensual and water, and it, you sort of brought in all these wonderful sort of earthy elements, and it's sort of as we moved along, and then we went out to the beach, and I was very motivated by the Mad Max series and love that whole gritty, physical, sort of dirty, down and dirty, dusty element. And I always think that creates interest rather than just moving your body, but bringing in all these other things that are organic and add to the texture of the imagery. And of course, Andrea loved it, and her lighting is beautiful and dark and sort of like a film noir. So it really was almost like we were creating these little mini paintings as we went along, which has been really, really fun.
Yeah, looking at the images, I mean, there's just so much depth to them. I mean,
thank you. That's a great word, depth. Yes, thank you.
Yeah, they're just it's wonderful. And those, for a coffee table book, that's exactly what you want. You want people sitting there, staring, looking. Contemplating while they're looking at the image.
Sure. I mean, it just can't be about a movement or a dance, because then that we're just talking about placement. So there's really got to be a purpose or a feeling behind it, and an imagery and a feeling and whatever that image conjures up for the person looking at it is their story. So I rarely describe or talk about what I was feeling, because that's just my personal, you know, and I barely remember, you know, it's just what in the moment. And then it's everyone else's story. You know, what is the person watching it? What do they feel? You know, then all of a sudden you have many different stories as opposed to just my story.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, which is fun. You know, it's art is interpretive. It's in the eyes of the beholder. It's whatever you want it to be.
Exactly, exactly. Now, one of the things, I mean, women who are in their 50s sometimes, you know, have or maybe lose a little bit of confidence when it comes to the body and being physical. So what would you tell women about having, you know, that positive body image for themselves?
Well, Robert, my next answer is going to be, I'll let you know when I get it. Because I really feel that the word confidence is sort of almost too much of a soundbite, and that it's confidence is so elusive. It's like trying to hold sand in your hand. It's very difficult to sort of grab or make happen. It's a very personal journey, and I think that that it can be found for me, and I only can speak for myself, through doing and changing and embracing the fear and the self-doubt that I think we as women or even as men have, particularly if you're trying to better yourself, and that sense of, you know, if you're not happy where you are and you know, people want to sort of wait for the, what I call the confidence fairy to sort of come down and sprinkle confidence dust in their eyes. And then once I get that confidence, I'll do it. Never happening. You have to do it in spite of the lack of it. And it is only, and I say only, through doing that you can get, you know, some confidence or a lot of confidence. But
Right. But
it really, confidence also comes from looking back and saying, wow, I didn't see it while I was doing it, but look where I've come from. It's almost you have to sort of turn around and look behind you and say, oh, I didn't know I could ski down that big mountain. Or, oh, I didn't realize how, you know, my body has transformed. You know, and I think in a way you just got to sort of get your head into the wind and sort of push through it. And it's not easy. It's, you know, and I think to embrace that not easy, it's okay. Don't be afraid of it. You know, I always say I grab self-doubt in one hand and I sort of grab my fear in the other and I make them my friends. And I say, all right, guys, come on. We're going. We're going to do this.
Yeah.
You know, and and that's how I think you just have to kind of navigate your way through the rough waters, and that's where the more you do, the more you do. And that's how
right.
my take on it is, you know.
Okay. Well,
yeah.
Know, that's great.
It
now,
was a long, well, it was a long it, explanation, but I feel very strongly
no, but
about it.
No, but it's a good point, you know, that it's a process. Now, I was looking for that confidence fairy, but I'm going to throw that one out the door.
No,
she doesn't
exist. I'm sorry.
I mean,
you can definitely have confidence, and I think that there is, and through doing, but not in the sense of people, I think, want to have that feeling before they do. And I always say
Right. Sometimes
you just got to do, and it will come, and you have to learn to navigate and build your muscles that way and deal with the struggle and the uncertainty. And through that, you'll be like, wow, I got that. That's cool. You know?
Yeah.
So.
Now, with young girls, you know, there's such a body image thing, you know, going on that can be unhealthy, you know, physically unhealthy for them. Would you say that the same approach as far as doing, you know, building the confidence would apply to young girls? Or is there anything, you know, unique when it comes to, you know, helping young girls with, you know, navigate that particular issue?
Well, I think a lot of that also comes from the parents. And I think it comes from love. I think it comes from support. It comes from touching on something that's far deeper than your physical shell. And that a lot of times when we feel empty inside or not good enough, we turn to the physical. Well, if I'm just thin enough, or if I'm just this, or if I'm just that. And I think it's important to look at what's really going on there. Why are you feeling a certain way? Why do you not feel good about yourself? And, you know, for each person, it's a little bit different. And really find out what that personal journey is, because we all have our own special uniqueness, and we're all just humans trying to, you know, make a difference or just get through the day, and to sort of try to put these unrealistic markers on ourselves is unhealthy, and that you have to find the deeper love and just to know that you're good enough and that, you know, you're finding your way and to find the good in life. And I think parents can really help with that and really tune into their kids.
Yeah, that's
for
that's
sure.
Good. Absolutely.
For sure. Yeah.
Well, Marjorie, we're actually down to the end of the show. It's only been a half hour.
I don't believe it, Robert.
I can talk to you for hours. But so when it comes to MG, what is it that you hope that, you know, the person who gets it is going to, how it will affect them? What do you hope that it brings out in the reader?
Well, of course, naturally, I would hope that they love it, and they, you know, if they're inspired by it, that would be, you know, the cherry on the icing. That would be, you know, the sundae of my life. But like I said, I can't, I don't want to tell people how to feel. It's art, and they will see it for however they see it. It's their journey, not my journey. You know, and I hope that they would get it and get something out of it, the way I got something out of it, you know?
Yeah, well, that's great. Well, you know, I love the imagery of the book. So,
thank you.
And I hope that you keep me in mind when MG2 comes about.
Absolutely. That'll be a quicker book. That'll be a lot quicker. No more 3 years.
Now, are you gonna use the same team for this that book?
Everything is the same, but we've actually gotten bigger, so we've expanded the horizons a little bit now. And it's gonna be great. It'll come out a little bit quicker, probably at the another year.
Well, great. Well, yeah. I look forward to it. Now, you are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. So, and I believe I'm connected with you on all of those three platforms.
Wonderful.
So I do want to invite listeners that if they use those platforms, they can join you. Facebook, it's Marjorie Goodson Dancer. Twitter, it's M. Goodson Book. And on Instagram, Marjorie Goodson. So, well, Marjorie, thank you for your time today. I really appreciate it, especially having just come from your dance exercise. I really appreciate you taking the time.
My pleasure. Thank you, Robert.
Again, my pleasure. So everyone, again today, my very special guest has been Marjorie Goodson. We've been talking about her fabulous book, MG. Again, the book is available from Amazon.com, and I do have a direct link to her book there in the show page description. And you can also find out more about Marjorie by visiting her website, which is MarjorieGoodson.com. And again, I do have a direct link to that website as well in the show page description. So, everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. And until we meet again.
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Be sure to visit our website at www.biteradio.me. That's biteradio.me. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Byte Radio Me, and our shows are also available as a free podcast from iTunes. And until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.